The committee of the whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 199. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 199, as introduced by Representative Gay, an act relating to tobacco taxes, increasing taxes on cigarettes, providing for distribution of increased taxes as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman of Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 199, Cigarette Taxes, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blickery, Eklund, Goggles, Kirkbride, and Northrup. Those who voted no, Representative Laux, Madden, Petroff, and Semlich, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 199 do pass. There are no amendments. I will turn the explanation over to the sponsor to explain the bill to you.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have before you House Bill 199, which is a very simple little one-page bill, and we'll go through that quickly. The guts of this bill exist over on page 2. The proposal of this bill is to raise the tax on a cigarette from 3 cents a stick to an additional 5 cents a stick for a total of now 8 cents a stick. We go through the fact that this additional new tax will be directed toward Medicaid exclusively. And with that brief explanation, I would stand for any questions on the bill, Madam Chair.
Is there any other discussion on this bill? Just a second. We're trying a quorum. So we have enough? Okay. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it is, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 199 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No.
No.
This bill fails. Okay, just a second. Pursuant to House Regulation 6-6, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. And me. Is that failed? Okay. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll. Wow.
Baker.
Barlow.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickrey.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart. Burkhart?
Excused.
Burkhart excused. Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel. Esquivel excused. Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
No.
Green.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman.
Excused.
Harshman excused. Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
No.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik.
No.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone. Crone, Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
no.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Moniz, Moniz, Moniz excused, Nicholas,
excused.
Nicholas excused, Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
no.
Paxton,
aye.
Petrov, Petrov, Petrov excused. Pieperinen?
Aye.
Reeder?
No.
Semlick?
No.
Summers?
No.
Stubson?
No.
Teeters?
No.
Throne?
Excuse.
Throne excused. Wallace?
Excuse.
Wallace excused. Walters?
No.
Watt?
No.
Wilson?
No.
Winters?
No.
Zwanitzer Dan?
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave?
Aye.
Mr. Speaker?
No.
Crone? Crone excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Yagi, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 22 aye, 29 no, 9 excused.
Pursuant to House Regulation 6-6B, House Bill 199, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 130. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 130, as introduced by Representative Watt, an act relating to public school elective courses, providing for elective classes in biblical studies, requiring training of educators, providing rulemaking authority, and providing for an effective date.
You've heard the...
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 130, Education Elective Academic Bible Study, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Northrup, Pieperinen, and Teeters. Those who voted no, Representatives Connolly, Patton, Paxton, and Summers, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman.
That's okay. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters? Chairman Teeters is not here. Chairman Teeters isn't here. Vice Chair Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move that when the Committee of the Hall rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill Number 130 do pass, and I will turn over the explanation. And I will turn over the explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment to the good representative from District
Sweetwater. 17.
And, Madam Chair, I move the Standing Committee Amendment.
Thank you. Representative Watts.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess we take care of the amendment first. The amendment is page 5, line 14. Delete the word required and insert permitted. And then page 5, line 15. Is this even the right... Yeah, delete is not required to offer, and insert may cancel. And then also delete pages 4 through 8, the remainder of the bill. And that's the amendment. And I look at it as a friendly amendment brought by the committee, and I ask you to vote yes on the amendment.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The intention of the Standing Committee amendment was to simplify the bill. This is model legislation that many other states have adopted, and states that may not have the same version of local control that we do in this state. And so the intention with the Standing Committee amendment was really to get the bill more in line with the way our districts operate. So it gets rid of a lot of specific language that we didn't view as necessary, and then just clarifies that these courses can be given for credit. So I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Representative Watts?
Me too.
Any more discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee amendment to House Bill 130 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Okay, we can make fast and quick work of this. I expect one of the major objections is going to be the separation in church, separation of church and state issue. Let's see. Abington versus Schmidt, Supreme Court decision ruling in 1963. Public schools may not require devotional use of the Bible. In that same decision, however, the Supreme Court explicitly acknowledged that academic study of the Bible in public schools is constitutional as part of a good education. So we don't have to worry about that separation of church and state. All this bill does is make an elective course that may be offered by schools in the public school system. Now, this can already be done. The question is why do we need this bill? Right now, if you call a principal and ask him, hey, can we use the Bible as a textbook? He's probably going to say no, separation of church and state. And that has been the response I received from a couple principals I called. All this bill is doing is making a statement saying, yes, you can use the Bible as a textbook in the public school system, not to further Christianity, but to use it for law, government, literature, art, music, customs, morals, values, and culture. Again, this is an elective course. It is not a requirement. It is not to be used to further Christianity. It is to be used to teach on law, history, government, literature, art, music, customs, morals, values, culture, those things. It doesn't require a particular book, a particular Bible. Any Bible can be used. And I stand for questions.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question is whether or not the committee discussed whether we have, you know, flexibility and room for more courses. When I was on the Education Committee, it was a battle, constant battle that, you know, we have so many core courses, so many required courses for the Hathaway and what have you, that there isn't room for a lot of electives, and that the electives enrollments are thin already. And I just wondered if this is going to make the problem worse or how this fits into it. And I guess the other thing is, you know, if we can already do it already, why do we have a bill in front of us?
Chairman Teeters.
There was some discussion about that, but I think ultimately, at least for my vote coming down on the aye side of this bill, it was determined that all we're doing is setting up a process to clearly delineate to the districts that it is an option. The school district in this where this Capitol building sits has offered such courses before. The concern is that there are many districts that don't realize that it's a perfectly legal thing to do, and this just clarifies in statute that it is legal. Doesn't require them to do it.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This sounds altruistic, but
I'm concerned where we use the term Bible and refer to that. As to all the other religious groups and their religious literature, the Torah, the Quran, and other books like that, are we lining ourselves up for a long list of civil suits against the school districts when we allow this?
Representative Walters. Winters.
Got the W right. In answer to the last question that was just posed to us, I want to say right off the bat that this bill provides an opportunity for students to study the background content of all of the foundational documents of our country. This is the basis of much of our society. A study done by a university in the Lone Star State in 1984 analyzed some 15,000 items of political commentary from the years 1760 to 1805 to determine the sources that most influenced the development of political thought during that foundational period of our country. And in that study, they concluded that some 34% of the citations found in those writings were either to the Bible or to authors who made their conclusions based upon study of the Bible. Additionally, the founders repeatedly referenced 17th century philosophers. One of them, his name sounds like Mountain View. The other one, his name, he wrote some law books that his... Anyway, and the other one, they used keys to get in the door. You know, those are the three I'm talking about specifically. And they formulated their theories based upon intensive study of this foundational document. When you look at what it means to be a citizen of the United States of America, this is foundational to much of what our entire society is based upon. So offering the opportunity for our children to study this foundational book is something that will profit their knowledge of our history, their knowledge of how we came to be to a magnificent degree. And so on and for this bill, thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You may have noted that I've voted no in the committee on this, and the principal reason not only has to do with the separation, but also our Constitution providing biblical studies within public schools with using public funds. One of the things that I caution us in consideration, first off, is to let you know I am a Christian. I've studied Christianity, School of Theology, did that. But when we're talking about public schools, and the bill that says above elective courses on Hebrew Scriptures, Old Testament, and also the New Testament, we brought up during the committee that perhaps comparative religious study may be something that we should advance. Maybe we should have a basis for it. I find it interesting that one of the fastest-growing religions is a resurgence of Confucianism in China, which doesn't qualify as a religion, but rather a way of life. So I guess my perspective is that we're walking on kind of thin ice as it relates to stipulating statutorily New Testament, Old Testament of a specific religion, even though it happens to be the basis for three different religions in the world, not yet being the major one. So comparative religion would satisfy me, but that isn't what the bill proposes, and thus I voted no. Vote your own conscience.
Representative Louts.
Speaker. I'm really in favor of this bill, and I sat over there and I thought of all the great things I could say, and then this other speaker got up from the center part of the state with all the hot water, and I just want to say ditto. That's exactly what it's about from our founding fathers. Thank you.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I stand in favor of this bill also. I just ask you to remind her that our founding fathers, the fathers that actually put this country together, relied heavily upon a lot of the thoughts in that particular courses that we'll be looking at here. And this is historical value. You got to talk about the narratives, and let's talk about the poems that are contained in that book. Very good points to be taught to our children.
Representative Watts.
Constitution says freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. This bill will bring a diverse religious views. It'll not endorse, favor, promote, or disfavor any religious faith or religious perspective. Addressing the idea of the use of public funds, Congress during the Revolutionary War paid for Bibles to be used in our public school system. Congress bought Bibles to be used in our school systems as textbooks. You know, it goes back, and I ask you just to go ahead and give this a favorable vote. Let's move it on.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 130 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Bill passes. House Bill 130 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 164. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 164 is introduced by Representative Freeman, an act relating to school finance, eliminating the moratorium imposed upon alternative schools included within a district's configuration of schools under the block grant funding model, subject to specified conditions, granting rulemaking authority, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 164, Alternative Schools, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Teeter, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 164 do pass. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that don't know about alternative schools in Wyoming, we have had a moratorium in place on the creation of alternative schools for what I believe is close to 10 years. And that is largely because there was not a good process in place to determine whether or not it was a legitimate idea when the idea was presented district by district. And it was the feeling of the legislature at the time that the process was being abused. When you create an alternative school, obviously there's a cost to the state. There's facility needs. There are instructional needs. That thing is resourced up through our model. And there are real costs to the state. My concern all along has been that we have a process in place, and really what this bill does is put that process in place. And for further explanation, I would turn the sponsorship of the bill over to the good gentleman from the Green River.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The bill is simple. The fast way to lift the moratorium was just to lift the moratorium. But because there was some mischief that was took place in the past, I added some gates to go through. First thing that happens is, and you can kind of go through this with me on page 3, the guts of the bill that has been added. First, you have to be approved by the State Department of Education. You have to do a formal evaluation of why you want to have an alternative school, and you can see that on page 3, lines about 11 through 14. You identify what kind of students you would have, which would be on page 3, 18. That it fits in your school wide plan, which you can see on page 3. If you skip over to page 4, you continually monitor this alternative school. And again, on page 4, what you see is the use of quality learning supports. About 10 years ago, they put together a study on alternative schools, and they said that it was alternative schools serve a definite need within the state of Wyoming. After 2 formal evaluations, this new alternative school will go on to the district's 5-year plan so that they'll be just like any other school within the system. So basically what happens is this bill says you have to show that there is a need, you have to show that you're meeting the need with the school, and then after a certain period of time, then they become part of the regular system. And that usually takes, according to this, about 3 years. The other thing that it did is some districts were kind of using the alternative school to get ahead on the, it's my understanding, I don't know this for sure, but what I was told to get onto the list to build new schools. I handed a white paper out there to kind of show about where alternative schools are, what students that they basically service. Currently there are 15 alternative schools. The most traditional use of an alternative school is 9 through 12. I taught in a 9 through 12 alternative school for 23 years, so this is near and dear to my heart. There are other alternative schools that are out there. You can see one from 7 through 12, one that only goes 10 through 12, and one that actually has one 6 through 8. Nationally, there are alternative schools that go all the way down into the elementary school. You can see the age distribution. You can see it's primarily towards the junior and senior year. Sometimes alternative schools, many times the alternative school is being used for credit catch-up and to get people graduated from high school. It's important to realize that these schools teach, have the same obligations to teach the same content, but oftentimes they do that in a slightly different way. They're also subject to all the testing and other hoops that we put together. When I had the aide put together this white paper, he put the on the backside some testing results. Normally, when you want to do testing results, you want to have everything very high, and I was going to take. Take that out because it's not a universal endorsement of alternative schools. But if you look at that, and I think if you look closely, the strength of an alternative school is that you put a teacher right next to a student, and you can have remarkable positive relationships on there. And if you look, you can see that there are schools that have nobody below basic, and you can check with that above on the state level. Since we're trying to keep this for under 15 minutes of bill, unless you have questions, I call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Teeter's motion that House Bill 164 do pass the Committee of the Whole, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 164 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 208. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 208, as introduced by Representative Larson, an act relating to education, providing for resident tuition for military veterans at the University of Wyoming and community colleges as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 4, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 208, Veterans Resident Tuition Provisions, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Teeter, signed by Representative Connolly, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 208 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. My colleague from the Basin will explain the bill as well as the Standing Committee Amendment.
Representative Larson.
Madam Chairman and members of the House, this bill is a little complex, may require a little bit of time. I hope you'll indulge me with your patience. On January 12th of this year, we all received an email from a former first lieutenant in the Army that brought some points about that I had never been aware of. He stated that the federal government changed their reimbursement rates for the post 9/11 GI Bill benefit. Prior to last year, the benefit paid for 100% of a service member's tuition at any institution of higher learning, regardless of it being public or private, or whether a student was designated as a resident or non-resident at a public institution. With the change, today the government will pay the full price at any rate it would cost an in-state student. Any tuition or fees incurred above that rate is to be paid by the service member. He pointed out that oftentimes service members will serve in the state, serve in Wyoming, have a desire to come back here and serve and attain their education, but now under the GI Bill wouldn't be allowed to do that. So I, not knowing any better, took that email to the LSO and asked them to find out if this was correct or in error, and if it was in error, that I would contact this young man back and let him know what the problem, where he was wrong. They came back to me and said that he indeed was right, and asked if I wanted them to draft legislation. Now, I'm aware that there's a number of you that also went to the LSO. It's just that you were busy doing stuff when I'd went to them first. I came back and visited with my co-sponsors on this, who were all veterans in this body. They were all very supportive, and so what we've done is drafted a bill that would allow anyone who has been discharged from the armed services of this country, honorably discharged, to attend the University of Wyoming or any community college if they can prove, with in-state tuition, if they can prove that they are trying to establish residency here, and they can, they have to have a certificate or other evidence of release of discharge, and then they also have to show that there's been evidence of overt steps to relinquish the residence of any other state. In other words, they'd have to have a Wyoming's driver's license or a current voter registration card, a current Wyoming vehicle registration, evidence of employment in the state, or a current real property lease showing the veteran as a leasee in the Wyoming residence, or even a utility bill. Now, this statute in Section 21 applies to the University of Wyoming, and then again at the end of the bill, it applies to Section 21, which is the also applies to the community colleges. The LSO contacted the university. They've been very supportive of this thought and of this whole concept. As the bill was getting ready to go before committee, the University of Wyoming contacted me with part of the proposed amendment, and I'll talk about those amendments now and how they apply. The amendment that the University of Wyoming suggested was that, and the reason for it is they currently have 20 veterans who are attending the University of Wyoming, and if we could make this bill effective for the 12 months prior to the date that this is enacted, then those 20 veterans who are currently attending the University of Wyoming for the first time this year would be able to have in-state tuition. And then the other part of the amendment was brought forth by the National, our Wyoming National Guard, General Reiner's bunch, and their concern was that National Guardsmen could go through their whole career and not be designated a veteran, depending on how they're deployed and the assignments they've got. And so the second part of the amendment says, for the purposes of this subsection E of this section, military veteran means a covered individual as defined in 38 U.S.C. 3311-B, which is the federal regulations designating our National Guard troops. And so I guess without further explanation, I take questions on the standing amendment. And if there are none, I would stand for question.
Question having been called, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 208 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Thank you.
Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 208 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Representative Conley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
One moment, Representative Conley. House Bill 208 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Friends, in the West Gallery, I'd like to introduce a group of students from the Snowy Range Academy, a standalone charter school in Laramie, who are here for School Choice Week.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 131. The reading clerk will read the bill. Excuse me, that's going to be House Bill 209. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 209 is introduced by Representative Burkhart, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program, establishing a reporting system for Honor Hathaway recipients receiving post-secondary remedial education, requiring payment of tuition costs by school districts, authorizing loans as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman of Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 209, Remediation for Hathaway Recipients, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, and Teeters. Those who voted no, Representatives Paxton, Pieperinen, and Summers. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 209 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'll see if I can get my description of this representative correct, from the home of the state penitentiary.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. House Bill 209 is a fairly direct, simple, straightforward bill. And the concept is, if you hire someone to fix your house and they don't do it right, you expect them to fix it for free and make it correct. This bill requires the same thing with the education our students get in high school. If they go to UW or any of the other colleges, they expect to get there with the ability to perform. Many of those students, well, not many, but a few, can't do that and need remedial classes at the same time they're getting the top-level Hathaway scholarship. They have to take remedial classes in order to complete their college entrance requirements to function as an incoming freshman. This bill requires that those school districts with those students pay for the remedial classes that they have to take. There aren't many students that need that, and this applies only to the honors level Hathaway. Some school districts already do this. Two school districts in the northeast part of the state, one immediately east of the big mountains up there, said they have no problem with the bill because they have no students who would meet the requirements. Their Hathaway Honor Scholarship students go and perform at the level they need to. They graduate with those requirements. Other one in the northeast corner of the state issues their students a guarantee that says if they need remedial classes, the school district will pay for them. There are other school districts in the state who send their students to the colleges and the big school over the hill who need remedial classes. In fact, there's a school district that 66% of their students need remedial classes of some sort when they go to those higher education facilities. This bill merely requires that the school districts fulfill their obligations. They give them the education they need to get started in college, in a second post-secondary school. The items in here on the money provide that the school districts can take a loan out of next year's block grant because they weren't prepared for this bill. In that average year, there are probably 20 or under students who would meet the requirements of this. There aren't many. But again, it's to make those students whole to their education. Like I said, you hire someone to work for you, you expect they perform. And if they don't, that they make it right out of their pocket. This merely does the same thing with our high schools. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The only thing I'd like to ask the sponsor of this is that, you know, when you use the analogy of the roof, you know, you could, you know, the roof, you fix, you hire somebody to fix the roof and the roof leaks, you know, you got the proof in a bucket, or it's in a pail, the water has been going through the roof. But in this deal here, I'm wondering how we can be sure, and I realize you're just using honors, the top echelon for this repayment program or the cost of the remedial treatment. But when you're talking about a poor grade on a test, it could be, to me, there isn't just one reason for that or one potential cause. One cause would be that the high school didn't teach an adequate quality class so that they missed it. They didn't understand the material that they were expected to be teaching, and they dropped the ball, so to speak. The other thing is, the other hazard you got here is that a student can blow off that remedial test in such a way that even though he possibly learned it back when he took this class as a junior, by the time he got to be a freshman in college and took the test, well, he forgot it, or he didn't put any effort towards it, or that kind of thing. I guess to make a long story short, all I'm saying is it clear that we can blame the school in all cases? And along with that, I worry that this is kind of the, you know, these remedial classes and the cost of paying for them is probably the last vestige we've got in the whole Wyoming school system where a student has to be personally responsible. You know, at some point you have to say, look, you know, if the student didn't learn something and they didn't retain anything, there's got to be some culpability on their part. And I think this is a big improvement over the bill that you that was in here, I think, a year before or maybe 2 years ago, because it's just looking at the top tier, and that does narrow the issue that I'm talking about somewhat. But, you know, we pay for their ACT tests, we pay for, you know, their books, we pay for everything, and we pay for their testing. And now we're saying that, you know, even if you didn't learn, Johnny, we're going to go back and take a run at the school you went to instead of having you cover it for yourself. And that's the kind of thing I'm not opposed to this. I may vote for it, but I need to have a discussion on, you know, putting all the blame on one side or the other. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, I can agree with the last speaker but more. What happened to personal responsibility? I was at the very first meeting where we created Hathaway Scholarship, and it was so that we could motivate students to have opportunities, so that we could say, you know what, maybe your family finances are not to a point where you can afford to go to college, so we will help you. But here's the requirements. Take higher level classes, earn grades, do well on tests. Personal responsibility. Get there. Now, what is the school's responsibility? The school's responsibility is to offer the classes and to help get the kids engaged. But, you know, I also attended a meeting called Gen Y. Gen X, they were all about making the dollars. They were all about going to Wall Street. They were all about getting in the opportunities to, you know, use their education and let's really make it big in this world. Gen Y are stuck with overgrown thumbs from the electronics that they operate, and they don't get off the couch. And we heard at that seminar that if you want to hire someone from Gen Y, get their mother engaged. Give me a break. If kids want to go to college and if they want to partake of an honor scholarship that they can earn, and if they're tired of taking tests that seem meaningless, then don't give them the honors scholarship. Let them earn what we have given them. Don't just hand it to them and then say, oh, excuse me, I don't want you to have to get off the couch. Let me go fill out your job application. And by the way, let me pay for it too. No way. These kids want to go to college, then let's let them earn the right to go to college. Let's let them earn the grades. Let's, you know, you can lead a horse to water and you can't make it drink, and you can force a child to go to school and can't make him learn. But if they want a college education, they have to be vested in it.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I agree, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. But what do you do about the fact that we have districts that are experiencing a tremendous amount of grade inflation because we created this Hathaway Scholarship? This conversation needed to happen, and that's why I'm glad we're having this bill on the floor today in the House. And I believe this bill is for the districts. The bottom line is, if you're graduating these kids and you're giving them a 4.0 and they cannot get through remedial math at the college level, there's an inherent problem that we've created, and I think we've contributed to that problem. We have districts in this state that are doing a great job that have very few students that require remediation, and then we have districts like the good representative spoke about with a tremendous amount of remediation that's required. The Wyoming diploma needs to mean something, and as long as we have districts in the state that are inflating their grades to get more kids under the bar so that they can be eligible for the Hathaway Scholarship, I believe we have a problem. We also need to, at some point in time, have a broader conversation about remediation. I believe students should have the right to fail, which means if they're not ready to take a course and they sign up for that course, we should let them fail. And I, you know, this bill doesn't address all those issues. We had another bill in committee that I was hoping would make it to the floor, and unfortunately, it didn't make it out of committee. That also dealt with these concepts that we're talking about today. I would urge you to go ahead and pass this bill. I think it's a good first step. We're only talking about that top Hathaway scholarship, those kids that you would consider to be your best and brightest. There is some obligation, in my opinion, on the part of the districts to ensure the product that they're producing.
Representative Summers.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, fellow members. I stand on and against this bill. As Chairman Teeter said, we heard another bill in committee yesterday. What was stated there, that there was a task force that was going to get together to look at remediation. And it was the suggestion then that we lay that bill yesterday aside until that work was done. What I'm suggesting is that we lay this bill aside until that work is done as well. Thank you.
Representative Northrup.
Well, I agree with all the previous representatives and their points. However, I'd like to point out that there's a time in especially a young man's life when the first time he gets away from home, he goes through what I termed the other night, I heard, the knucklehead syndrome, where he doesn't exactly pay attention to school. He spends too much time socializing, and as a result, ends up maybe screwing up a year of college before he figures out what he's doing. I don't think that's the district's part. Once again, that goes back to the student responsibility, speaking on and against this bill. Thank you.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On and against the bill, it's only going to affect probably a dozen kids. I mean, these are kids who have a 25 ACT or higher. It's not very often I disagree with the good chairman of education, but I think this whole remediation thing really needs some work. We talked about this in education last night and had a bill that failed, but really it's a cottage industry. It's $1.9 million a year that's taxed onto our kids or others who come back to college. And remember, Wyoming, statutorily, we have to admit every Wyoming citizen to our junior colleges. We do. High school dropouts, GEDs, 40-year-olds who haven't had been in a school in 20-some years. So all those folks come back, and that's part of that remediation plan. And so if remediation worked, that would be one thing. You'd say, yeah, let's keep remediation alive. But the statistics really don't. And I'll just point out to the math statistics that came out in a report that was given to JAC and the JAC. System-wide community colleges, 987 kids. I think this is 06 was the latest data. 987 kids had to take remedial math. Well, at the end of the game, only 239 of those 987 actually could pass college algebra. So, and these aren't all just high school kids come. In fact, most of the kids who qualify for Hathaway scholarships are doing pretty well, and particularly for the top two tiers. But think of the concept. It just doesn't work. And so a kid who goes to all these years of school, graduates or doesn't graduate, or goes and works for 20 years and comes back, but all of a sudden the community college or it's community college is where this is done. Even at the university, they send them to a nice building that the community college in the state capitol built over in the, across the mountain to do just this function, big, beautiful building. But so they send them there to do this. And so this community college math professor then works his magic for a semester, 3 days a week, and all of a sudden all of your math problems are cured. And the statistics show it doesn't work. So intensive counseling, math labs, tutor labs, those are the things that work. And so I would hope at some point that this body will say, you know, enough of this deal. We've given Community College Commission, University of Wyoming, the ability to raise tuition and fees. That's enough of a tax. And we kind of stay out of that. But this is a different type of tax that puts a time barrier on people. They have to stick around longer to complete their degree, so it's counterproductive to these completion rates. And it's also counterproductive, I think, just it's the other piece of the tax, time and then money. These things cost money, and about $1.9 million a year to our community colleges. So, you know, and then this particular bill, like I say, these are our top kids. Most of them are real smart. It's probably less than a dozen kids, maybe a kid who's to get a 25 on the ACT and actually be remedial math, that means they probably have a 31 or better on the other parts of the ACT. So I don't think it's necessary. I think it's kind of a solution in search of a problem. So on and against. Thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think what this bill is trying to get at is to let those parents know that they're in a school district where a lot of those kids are using or have to take remediation classes. Do that school district that was mentioned earlier where 66% of the kids are going through remediation, do those parents realize that that school district is putting out a substandard product? And I believe there is personal responsibility that is required, but I don't think this bill, either yay or nay, affects that. This remediation is going on whether we pass this bill or vote against this bill. It has no effect on personal responsibility. It's already going on that kids are not taking that personal responsibility that they should, but that is not affected by this bill. This bill is just saying that school district now has more skin in the game, And obviously we're using state dollars that the school district gets for other state dollars. But now we're at least putting some shame in the school district to step up and to let those parents know that that school district is failing their children on and for the bill.
Is there any more discussion on the bill? Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A couple things that were mentioned. You know, the school districts do need to motivate their students. Some do, some don't. And the students do need to be invested in their own education. And sure, you can have some students who will goof off a little bit and miss a test. Remember, these are the honors levels. These are what we consider our best and brightest. I don't think all of them are goofing off or are involved with the knucklehead syndrome. I went to a high school where they had three rules. Take the courses they tell you to take, perform at your absolute best, and that meant you get A's. That doesn't mean B's. You were expected to get A's, and the parents were expected to support all of that, and they would get you into any university you wanted to go to, and I mean any. And that includes some of the best-named schools in the country, and they got scholarships to go there. There was an expectation that we tend to lack, and the school districts tend to not give to the students. Some school districts do great. And I'll leave you with the guarantee that a school district in the northeast part of the state goes to that's well represented here. Graduates who have the following criteria, 3.0 GPA or better, completed the recommended college preparation curriculum as follows: 4 years of English, 3 years of math, 3 years of social studies, 3 years of natural science. The guarantee will entitle tuition reimbursement for any remedial course required by a trade school, community college, or university prior to the student's entry into a regular course sequence. Reimbursement will be at the rate of the big school across the hill. Guarantee will be in effect from the date of graduation until the student's 20th birthday. This school district doesn't have a problem with this bill, and they're motivating their students. All this bill asks is that the school districts who aren't doing as good of a job own up to their responsibility to give their kids an education and to see that they don't have to take remedial classes that they have to pay for. It's that simple. If every school district issued this guarantee, there'd be no reason for the bill. Thank you. And with that, I'd call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman... Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Madam Chairman, I'm just not convinced this is going to motivate school districts the right way. And all it does is threaten them with an unforeseen liability in their budget for which they have no money. And it may be because of the vagaries of the kid. Maybe the kid went to college and found out that his new favorite nutritional supplement is beer. I don't know. A lot of bad things happen. And I don't think it's right to saddle the school district with this potential liability. And it might have an adverse effect, which might be they might start grading kids down, saying we're not going to take a chance on them. We can't afford it. We're just not going to give them those grades that maybe they deserve. And I think a lot better way to get at it is is all the school accountability bills that we passed, Senate File 104. We've been all through that to try to get it all back on the track. And I think that's the tool that ought to be used to improve our schools and not this punitive budget measure. So on and against.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Bill number 209 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Thank you. Those opposed, please stand. Having failed the standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Blevins.
No.
Blickrey.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Coleman. Connolly,
no.
Davison,
no.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Filer,
no.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Gingery, excused, Goggles,
no.
Greer,
no.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
no.
Hutchings,
no.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic. Kasparic?
Aye.
Kirkbride?
No.
Croker?
Aye.
Crone?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Lockhart?
No.
Laux?
Aye.
Madden?
Aye.
McKim?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Moniz?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Northrup?
No.
Patton?
No.
Paxton?
No.
Petroff?
Aye.
Piperinen?
No.
Reeder?
Aye.
Simlick?
No.
Summers? Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
no.
Wallace,
aye.
Walters,
no.
Watt,
no.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Petroff, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 21 aye, 38 no, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill 209, having failed the roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 131. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 131 is introduced by Representative Yeagy, an act relating to game fish, providing for designation of species of fish as non-game species in specified waters through rule and regulation, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chair, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 131, Game Fish Definition, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Hutchings, Yeagy, Crone, and Piperinen, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Davidson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 131 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll turn the explanation for the bill and the amendment over to my good friend from House District 19.
Representative Yagi. Yagi.
Thank you.
My good friend.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you get this out of your box, Game and Fish just passed this around. It shows a bunch of guys catching these fish that this bill is about. First of all, let me take care of the amendment, if I could. On line 15 of page 1, it says ling, grayling and ling. The proper... the proper name given throughout all our statutes is burbot. So that's the amendment. So we're just making it consistent with the rest of the statute. So I'd request your favorable vote on changing the name from ling to burbot.
Question having been called, all in favor, say aye.
Opposed? No.
The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 131 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Yagi.
Thank you. This picture shows four guys over on Flaming Gorge catching in 4.5 hours over 200 burbot. I was there just before I came when we were having fun in life. I went out one night. Four of us caught 50 of them in 2 hours, and I got called on to take them home. And so I took them all home, and I learned, told me how to skin them. You cut all around the head, pull it off with pliers, and the skin just peels off just like a sock coming off, and then you flay the meat. And the meat is really good, by the way. We ate it and had a big old family fish fry with it. But 50 of them took pushing 2 hours to clean. This was 200. I talked to some of the guides that are over there, and they are doing this quite regularly. The problem is, in our statutes, the ling cod is, the burbot is a game fish, and you cannot discard them. You have to kill them, so if you catch them, you kill them. But then what do? And they're taking them out and just discarding them. I could tell you some other things, but they just discard them. And that is not legal. So we came to Game and Fish and said, could you, by rule and regulation, make it so we could classify certain fish in certain waters as a non-game so we can get rid of these? Now, they really want to get rid of these. And if you look at the back of the page, this little list of things, it tells you why they are so bad. They're predators on other little fish. They eat the kokanee and lake trout, which are the premier fish in Flaming Gorge. It's the ones we really like to catch. And they're just bottom feeders. They go along like catfish, little feelers, and just eat up all the eggs. So they want to get rid of them, but they're catching them, but they can't discard them. And so this is the purpose of this bill. You'll notice that I've got every legislator from the Southwest on this bill. So the folks involved with Flaming Gorge, Representative from Green River, was kind of instrumental in getting this whole thing going through an email with Trout Unlimited and so forth. And he's the one that got this handout. So the bill is simply to classify a game fish that we want to get rid of and want to get rid of in big numbers as a non-game fish and allowing the folks that are catching them to discard them so they're not getting tickets for getting rid of a game fish. If you catch carp over there or suckers, you can just throw them on the bank and leave them there. But with this, you can't do that, and the Game and Fish is kind of in a hard spot in giving tickets, and the people that are catching them and removing them in big numbers, which we really want to do to help the Flaming Gorge fishery, this will solve the problem. So that's kind of the explanation of what's going on.
Question being called. All in favor of Chairman Davidson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 131 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 131 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 161. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 161 is introduced by Representative Throne. An act relating to highways, increasing the fee for permits for outdoor advertising along highways, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 161, Outdoor Advertising Fees, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yagi, Laux, McKim, Reeder, and Daves Wadenser, signed by Representative Daves Wadenser.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Wadenser?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 161 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And I'm going to turn over the Standing Committee amendments and the bill, because they're both closely related, to the fine representative from House District 11.
Fine Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring you today, members of the 62nd, I cannot remember what year we're in, members of the 62nd, House Bill 161. The purpose of this bill is to update the fee structure for a portion of outdoor advertising, which YDOT is obligated to manage. Essentially, we're talking about the large billboards in the not in the highway right-of-way, but next to the highway right-of-way, which require a permit from the Wyoming Department of Transportation. The Wyoming Department of Transportation has been charging, I believe, the same fee since the good speaker and I were in elementary school. It's a statutory fee, and it hasn't been updated. So the purpose of this bill is to update the fee structure for the permits, which we learned from the Department of Transportation, are federally required. The purpose of the fee and the new fee language, which is in the Standing Committee Amendment, is to provide flexibility to the Department of Transportation. It's similar to the fee structure they have for other programs, but it's capped. They can't go higher than $15 on renewals. The way the permit program works is you get an initial permit and then you have an annual renewal. And there are tasks that the department has to undertake as part of this program, and so the purpose of the fee is to cover their costs. And again, the new amendment language allows the department to go up to $15 on the renewal, but their estimate is that right now they could recover their costs for $11. And I would be happy to answer questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, but if there are none, I'd call for the question.
Question having been called, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee number 1 to House Bill 161 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I essentially explained the bill with the Standing Committee Amendment, but one important piece of information that I left out is that the trade group, that is subject to this permitting requirement actually had no objection and supports the bill. So I think that's a key piece of information for everyone to have.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. I'm a little confused on how it costs the Highway Department so much money to administer this program, because as I read it anyhow, these are signs that are put outside of the highway right-of-way, which would mean they're on privately owned property. So while they are required to make sure they're not obscene or grotesquely oversized, I don't see how it can cost them so much money. If you could explain that, please.
Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Because they are near the highway right-of-way, there are engineering requirements and spec requirements and location requirements, and they have to, and I'll let the good chairman of transportation correct me if he heard something differently in committee, but they also they have to meet certain requirements because they are close to the right-of-way. So it's not a matter of just throwing them in the ground. There is some initial inspection.
Majority Whip Stepson?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to provide a notice of conflict on this bill.
Thank you, sir. Representative Throne?
There are no other questions. I'd like to call for the question.
Question being called. All in favor of Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 161 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 161 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 179. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 179 is introduced by Representative Haverson, an act relating to commercial motor vehicles, amending the fine for operators of commercial vehicles who fail to observe road closures, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred House Bill 179, Failure to Observe Closed Roads, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagy, Laux, McKim, Reeder, and Dave Zwanzer, signed by Representative Dave Zwanzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanzer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 179 do pass, and there are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the fine representative from House District 22.
Fine Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a really simple bill. It's to bring into conformity two statutes which calls the same violation, but one calls for a $100 fine, the other calls for a $750 fine. This has to do with the closure of the Teton Pass in Teton County. And for the same violation, namely failure to observe signs and markers, one trucker can get fined $100 under Statute 31-18703, yet another can be fined $750 under Statute 24-109. When we met with the Wyoming Highway Patrol, we put together a list of actions to take that will increase the safety on this 10% grade pass, and one of them was to bring forth in the legislature this year this conforming bill so that $750 would be the fine under both statutes.
Is there any other questions on the bill or discussion? Representative Teeters, I'm sorry, Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. What is the penalty for driving on a closed road for a non-commercial vehicle?
Representative Howison?
The penalty would be $750, but there are exceptions, and those remain in place for a non-commercial vehicle. If a vehicle has to traverse a closed road, a phone call to the Highway Patrol will get you through that road with permission. Without permission, if you're caught, it's $750.
Are you ready for the question? Didn't see you. You sure? Are you sure, Representative Madden? Okay. Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As some of you know that were here in previous sessions, we had a long discussion over this exact bill. But when we did that discussion, we only addressed it in Title 24. Come to find out, under the other title, we have a similar language, and we didn't get that switched around. So we're really just, as the fine representative mentioned, we are conforming both those statutes. And remember, there are exceptions that you can go through road closures, and there's a great system in. And we had an hour or two long hour debate a couple of sessions ago when we raised that fine to $750. So I am 100% in favor of this bill, and I think it's a great one. Thank you. I call for the question.
Question being called. All in favor of Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 179 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 179 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 182. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 182, as introduced by Representative Croker, an act relating to highways, establishing the right of counties to determine highway rights of way on specified federal lands, providing definitions, requiring notice, providing for judicial review, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 182, Determination of Highway Rights-of-Way on Federal Lands, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagie, Laux, McKim, Reader, Dave Zwanzer, signed by Representative Dave Zwanzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanzer?
Thank you again, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 182 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And I would like to take care of the Standing Committee amendments, which is one, and I'm going to ask you to vote no on it, but I want to tell you what the committee was trying to do. Early in the bill, it says that the counties can take action without the help of the state of Wyoming. Later in the bill, it says that if some difficulty happens, then the state has to be served. So what we did was change the word served on page 6, line 4, and put in the words given notice. Later, unbeknownst to us, LSO came out and said that they had a little better language. So I would ask you to vote no on the Standing Committee Amendment, and then we'll go the Committee of the Whole and get that language switched, and then we'll turn over the explanation of the bill.
Question? Oh, you guys confuse me. Did you want to speak? Okay. Question being answered. Excuse me. You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Forgive me. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Whoa. The Standing Amendment number 1 to House Bill 182 has failed. We are back on the bill. Chairman's Wanter.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 182 and ask for your favorable consideration. This amendment is the fancy language that I believe it's required that just basically says that they want to give the state notice of what's happening, but they are not necessarily required to defend the action, and I would ask for your yes vote. Aye vote.
We're on the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. All those in favor of the committee amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman's Wanter.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the explanation of the whole bill, not just that one word, we'll turn it over to the representative from House District 35.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I give you House Bill 182, and I'm going to give a little bit of background on this bill so you can understand what it's trying to do, but I think this is a tool that is much needed for the state of Wyoming. In 1866, the federal government passed the revised statute 2477 bill, and it was a federal law that as the West was being expanded that allowed roads and right-of-ways to be created across federal land. And by the way, there is a handout that was passed out that gives some further examples of the bill and some pictures of some examples. But that's so that statute was passed in federal law allowing states and individuals to create roads across private land. That statute stayed open until 1976. In 1976, It was repealed in the sense that no new roads could be created, but it gave it acknowledged the pre-existing roads and gave right of way to the state or individual who had created those roads. And so what House Bill 182 does is it uses that federal law to make sure that we can claim the rights of way that the state has across federal land. And this is important because in some other states, specifically the Beehive State, the federal government has started closing some roads on federal land that fell under this law, and the state had to litigate those one by one and was victorious. The federal courts ruled in favor of the state, said they did indeed have a right-of-way across those federal lands. But what we're doing here with House Bill 182 is we are creating a system where the counties have the option to file a claim that they do indeed have these right-of-ways and own these right-of-ways. And so we're just kind of taking some preemptive action to register them as our right-of-way before the federal government gets around to closing it. And this is very important because we all know the importance of our state trust lands for funding for our schools. And a lot of these roads are the only access that we have to our state trust lands. So if those roads were to be closed, we would not be able to access them. So the intent of this bill is to just give Wyoming the tool to be able to use federal law to claim rights of way that we already have to ensure that our access to those state trust lands will never be shut down. It does not require any counties to file any right of ways. It just gives them a system to do so if they were to choose to do so. So that's the brief explanation for the bill, and I'll stand for any questions.
Are you ready for the question? Question having been called. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have one question on the bill. There's a provision in here about the burdens of proof of the various parties, and I just had some questions or concerns about it because it switches the burden of proof depending upon whether you can establish continuing use of the road or that it's readily identifiable. And I was just trying to figure out as a practical matter how that works. Do you bear the burden of proof of coming in and showing that so you don't bear the burden of the proof from that point going forward? Or how does the sponsor envision that working?
Representative Croker.
Thank you. I will answer that the best that I can. The intent of the bill and where the cases that have gone to court have always ruled in favor of the state are cases where it's been a road that's been in continuous use. If you look at the handout, an example of one of those roads is the very first color picture, where you can see that it clearly is a road. It's been in continuous use. There's no question. And the idea is that's the type of road that we're talking about, and there the burden of proof would not be on the state. Where the burden of proof is going to switch is if somebody finds a road, it's no longer in use, the county tries to say, hey, there was once a road here, we're going to reestablish that there was a road here. You can't really see the road, but we found some evidence that it was here back in the 50s. That's the type of road where the burden of proof would switch to the county because the road had not been in continuous use. But if the road has been in continuous use and is obviously a road, then that's what this bill is designed to protect. So I hope that answered the question properly.
All right, question being called. What, Representative Yagi? No, cool. Are you sure? Okay, sir. Are you ready for the question? All right, question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 182 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 182 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 55. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 55 is introduced by Representative Greer, an act relating to environmental quality, amending the criteria for the Environmental Quality Council to modify or suspend certain requirements for specified small surface mining operations, exempting access roads from small surface mine acreage limits, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 55, Surface Mining Operations Exemptions, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Readers, Somers, and Winter, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 55 do pass, and I'd like to turn the explanation over to the great legislator from Washakie County and Worland.
Representative Greer.
Madam Chairman, I'm just a guy with a good $10 haircut. Don't forget that.
I won't sweat it, sir.
What I bring you is a bill regarding the small mines in the permitting process, which again is our 10-acre small mines used primarily for aggregate and primarily in the road industry. Trying to bring this a little bit into the modern era, and this bill does two things. One, it removes the 10,000 yard per year limitation, which applies to the stacking, overburden, everything, just 10,000 yards. And then it also removes the haul road from the calculation of the 10 acres. For the first component of it, what our testimony was is that the equipment that we have in this day and age is so much larger, and the requirements for the quality of aggregate and the specifications in particular in the road construction repair industry is such that it takes up a large component of the 10 acres simply to set up the crushers. Also, the testimony we had found is that this aggregate is being found to be just a little bit deeper in the ground, and so that this 10,000-yard limit really shuts them down from being able to adequately use the small mine permits for any type of road construction project. In addition, we have some enhanced requirements to the regulatory agency regarding a larger topsoil and overburden requirement. So what we're looking at is this: get rid of the 10,000-yard requirement, just to bring us forward to where we are, to make these a more usable tool. The second component regarding the haul roads also helps add to that, to pull that out of the 10 acres. But in addition, it encourages the contractors or the applicants for these permits to be able to move their mines, their quarries, further away from the road, so we're not just seeing them right there, right off the highway. Right now, the incentive is to get them as close to the highway or the county road as possible, and by removing the roads, it's just an incentive to allow that to happen. Additionally, regarding the roads, is these permits are still required. The roads have to be bonded. They have to have the reclamation plan. All of those are in place. Additionally, I had heard a few comments regarding dust control and some of those other things. The operators still have to go through and get their air quality permit. We're not circumventing the environment here. We're just simply trying to make this a much more usable tool for our contractors within the state. I'll stand back for any questions. Heard a lot of testimony on this. Be happy to answer any.
Are you ready? Thank you. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 55 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 55 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 147. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 147 is introduced by Representative Kasparic.
Majority floor leader.
Madam Chairman, please move House Bill 147 down to the bottom of the stack. Next bill will be House Bill 163.
Thank you, sir. Will do.
Thank you. I was a little late on the draw.
No problem, sir. Ooh. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 163. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 163 is introduced by Representative Freeman, an act relating teachers, establishing a loan repayment program, enabling teachers to provide concurrent enrollment instruction, specifying eligibility criteria, prescribing procedures and providing for repayment of loans, providing for program administration by the Wyoming Community College Commission, granting rulemaking authority, sunsetting the program, and providing for an effective date. And Madam Chairman, we have two reports here. The first one, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 163, Adjunct Professor Incentives, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Teeters, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman, further reviewed by your committee number 2, Appropriations, as they respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Esquivel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, and Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 163 do pass, and I further move the adoption of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And, ladies and gentlemen, the House Committee took it upon themselves to actually increase the appropriation with Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And out of deference and respect to the Appropriations Committee, I would ask you to vote no on the Standing Committee Amendment. And they further refined our amendment anyway, but at this point I would ask you to vote no. Question on the amendment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 163 has failed. We're back on the bill. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would move House Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to 163 and ask for your favorable consideration. Members, this reduces the appropriation down to the original bill at $100,000, and then in addition, the Appropriations Committee, the bill had written in that up to 5% of that $100,000 could be used for administrative costs with the Wyoming Community College Commission. We removed that, so all of the funds will, in fact, go to the program. And so I think that's the gist of the amendment. So we brought it back to the original request and removed the administrative 5% carve-out. So I'd stand for any questions.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Excuse me, guys. Having heard the question, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 163 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The bill will be explained and will walk us through the bill of the good chairman or the good representative from the Green River.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In your box is a black and white copy of a brochure that I use in my job to promote career dual and concurrent enrollment in high schools. And instead of preparing something specifically for the legislature, I think that this will do my purpose rather quickly. If you look at the title of the bill, it says Adjunct Professor Initiatives. And what this bill does is the adjunct professor is really going to be a high school teacher. Back in, I believe, 2010, the legislature passed a law that became Senate Enrolled Act 52. And if you're looking
on the front page of the brochure that I handed out, it reviews that law. And the brochure says, very quickly, as a Wyoming high school student, you can begin your college career early. Senate Enrollment Act 52 expresses the legislative intent that all Wyoming high school students will have the opportunity, and that is the key word, to complete 12 college hours prior to high school graduation. They went on, and the P16 Council helped the community colleges to come up with some rules and procedures, and that's how I got my retirement job. If you look on the other side, it says, what does college and high school look like? And for a brief education for the body is there are three, but two that really stand out of how a high school student would be able to take college classes before they graduate. The first one is dual enrollment, and that's pretty straightforward. What happens is the high school student enrolls directly into a college class. Now that may be on campus, that may be on an outreach site, or that might be on distance learning, an internet class. Schools like that, but the problem is that they have to pay for tuition, and that causes some heartburn. Because if there isn't a BOCES that has enough income, they cannot afford to pay that tuition. What the schools would like to do instead is concurrent enrollment. And concurrent enrollment is where high school teachers that are approved by the college are teaching college curriculum. And in my college, that means straight off the syllabus using the same materials with a lot of common assessments. And you can look at that at the advantage of concurrent classes. How the funding works with concurrent classes is the districts have to pay for their students their college tuition and fees, even though that the high school teacher is the ones who are teaching that. And then what happens is, as soon as the high school district pays for the tuition and fees, then the school district bills the college for the use of their room, their teacher, the exact same amount. What happens is if you do a concurrent, it's a wash system. Okay? And that is why the district would prefer to do that. Here is why I come before you today with this adjunct professor initiatives. It is difficult to get a high school teacher to be approved as a college adjunct. Because what happens is the Higher Learning Commission, which accreditates the colleges, require that you have to have the exact same qualifications as your teaching staff on at the college or teaching the dual classes. This is an over-exaggeration, and people get excited when I say this. When you're being approved by a college to teach at a college, it is more at the content of the classes that you are teaching. When you are approved at a high school level, you have content requirements, but you also have pedagogy. And what happens is when you add the pedagogy, oftentimes what happens, or the way you teach, what often happens is you don't have the same content background as what happens is you would have as a college professor. So in my job, I go out to the different districts and I'm saying, we really would like you to teach X class. And they have excellent teachers that have been teaching at a high school level for a long time, and under the best of circumstances, they can also teach at the next level, the entry-level college. But here comes the rub. They don't have the content knowledge to where the Higher Learning Commission would recognize their credentials. There are lots of, I am told there is lots, and this bill will find out if there is, lots of teachers that would like to go back to school to take the classes that they need. And what happens is most of the people that would like to do this are younger teachers. And frankly, what's happening to a lot of these younger teachers, most of these younger teachers, put whatever descriptive word you want there, is they're coming out of college and they have what they call college loans. And sometimes these college loans are $20,000 to $30,000. They're also usually having a family, and they're not enthused to reach into their pocket and pull out tuition and fees again, plus all the time that it will take for them to get their approval. The other thing that happens is if they go back to school and they become an administrator, and I'm making up these numbers, you may have a salary schedule for a teacher that will start at $45,000. If you're an administrator, the base salary of an administrator is much higher than that. And like I said, I'm making up these numbers, maybe $75,000. It makes economic sense for you to go into administration if you're a teacher, because what happens is you go automatically to a new base. What we're asking these teachers is to go back and to get the classes that they need, but they're going to stay on the same salary schedule. They will get a bump with their master's degree, if that's what they end up, or the classes that they have, but it won't be as much. I would walk you through the bill, but I think I can do it much quicker if I tell you the simple concepts, and then you can see it in the bill as you go through. What happens is the school district and the teacher would identify classes that they would like to teach for college credit in the high school. And they will contact the colleges, and they'll say, do they qualify for this particular class that they're teaching? If there is a discrepancy, then what would happen is that the high school would contact, or the individual teacher would contact with a college to where that they would take the classes that they need to where they would be qualified as an adjunct professor. And to pay for that, what would happen is the teacher, the school district, and the college would make an agreement that if you take these classes, that would be paid for, in this case, by the state, and then when you get done, you will stay in the school district and you will teach these college-level classes so that the students will have the benefit of taking college classes before they graduate from high school. The program would be administered by the Community College Commission. They would set up the rules and regulations, and this is, in my opinion, probably one of the best ways that you can get teachers qualified to teach at in Wyoming. First of all, the teacher is already hired. You have an idea of how good the teacher is. They're probably going to stick around. And by putting together this loan program, it doesn't become an undue burden for them. Now, it's going to become an undue burden anyway because they have to take the classes. But it doesn't become a financial burden to where that these teachers can get the academics that they need to teach. If there isn't any other questions, I stand for questions. This is a good bill, especially if you if you're from a smaller school district.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This explanation still doesn't tell me why we have to set up a student loan program for this. There's got to be other sources of borrowing than for us to take school foundation money and set up a loan account for this purpose. The other thing, if you do that, as far as the loan repayment schedule and the interest rates, what I'm seeing on page 5 is that that's going to be left up to the college commission, the community college commission or something like that. And that's, there's no effort to offer a market rate for that. It seems to me like this is just kind of a program looking for a purpose, in my opinion. There's got to be college loan programs. There's got to be, bank loans. There's got to be some kind of loan program that makes us be something other than the lender of last resort. And I'm not clear on how we ever get paid back on this. I mean, evidently the payback schedule is going to be set up by rules and regulations. These parameters aren't outlined in the law that I can see. And I question whether this is, what have we done in the past? I mean, how have these teachers become credentialed before we're getting into the loan business?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The previous speaker last week referred to himself when he was speaking about a bill as a curmudgeon, and I decided I like that word. I think that fits in this case. there are a lot of people in the state of Wyoming that would love to have a state-sponsored loan program to go to grad school. I mean, we can probably think of all sorts of friends and neighbors and relatives that would like to do this. And as you know, all of us in our youth walked 5 miles both ways to school uphill in a blizzard. And when I went to grad school, I was paying back my undergraduate loan and supporting myself and working 30 hours a week and going to school full time. And the state didn't give me a cushy loan program. And I think that people who are capable, people able to work on master's degree material can probably do this without so much help from us against this bill.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Just so there's no mistake, I am not a curmudgeon. but I do support this bill. And here's another way of looking at it. This is a bill about building capacity in our high schools and our community colleges. And the result of that capacity build, and I'll give you a good example. In the college that is near my home, we had a young lady graduate on the Thursday night from our community college with a Associate of Science degree. Then on Friday night, she graduated from her high school. So she completed this dual enrollment. That's the prototypical way of looking at it, is that a high school senior could graduate from a community college or have a number of hours completed that are transferable to our community colleges within our system to our university and receive her high school diploma. But I would suggest this is a capacity build that helps Wyoming citizens, and the end result is a benefit to our high school students.
Representative Semlick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions and then maybe a comment. For those who are enrolled in this program and successfully completed, my question would be, and I think it was partially answered, that in the most of our district salary schedule that they would likely see a pay bump as a result of their continuing hours or an advanced degree. So I think it's, I think there's some, been some consideration that might already be given in that. The second question would be that do school districts have ongoing programs to provide continuing education, and do the school districts pay for that? And then a comment is probably not too much unlike our last two speakers. When we look at these loan repayment programs, the variety that we've had, we look at them as an incentive to to increase enrollment, and I'm not sure that I've heard a strong case that we need to do that. While in fact we might increase the participation in the program, there's certainly no guarantee that those teachers who had this concurrent training will stay in that district. They might go someplace else, and I don't know if that disqualifies them or not. But there's a lot of us that probably like to have some kind of an incentive program, a loan repayment program for all the different walks of life that we have here in Wyoming. And I'm not sure that we can do it for everything. So I just urge some caution on this one, too.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I thought the good representative from House District 33 told a great story, but I think that person found a way of getting a high school degree, getting a college degree without this program. And that gets to the point that I think is very important. It's a commitment of the individual. It isn't necessarily the state incentives that drive people to those things. If the individual has that kind of motivation, they'll make it, and there'll be great examples for others to make it. So on and against the amendment, or against the bill.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I met and was interviewed by the nation's number one curmudgeon, the gentleman that used to finish up the end of 60 Minutes, I guess I can say that. My friend from Buffalo just doesn't qualify for that category as yet. I rise in support of the idea that is behind this measure, and that is to provide an incentive means that educators have an opportunity to advance their own credentials in providing for an opportunity of those students that desire to go on to college and know that they want to go on to college. The interesting part about this is that I had reservations because it does include concurrent enrollment. It does encourage dual enrollment and concurrent enrollment, but it omits AP courses. And an AP course, in my mind, is an equivalent type of a function for schools. One school that I'm acquainted with has 12 AP courses and 24 joint and concurrent courses that are available to its student free of cost. Doesn't cost them anything to do that. And I think that opportunity is something that we value and find supportable. I wish that we had something that was a little broader, but I understand having the concurrent being administered by the Community College Commission is an advantage for what is proposed before you, and thus I'm supportive of it. But with the reservation, and I would like to see us be able to look at AP courses as well.
Seeing no other discussion on the bill, are you ready for the question?
If I could respond,
you'd
Madam
like
Chair?
To, sir? Okay. Representative Freeman.
To respond to the questions and the comments that were brought up, what's happening is we're responding to a legislative dictate, for lack of a better way of saying it. What they want is they want Wyoming high school students to be able to have the opportunity to take 12 college hours before they graduate from high school. And basically what they did is they sent out that to the community colleges and to the high school to take that. One of the big things that they wanted to do is they wanted to increase rigor in the high school. If you are taking college classes in the high school, you're raising the rigor up. And there are schools that are in this state that have either dual or concurrent to where that over 70% of the students, the high school juniors and seniors that are there, are taking those classes. What we want to do is we want to make that more uniform across the state. This is an incentive. It isn't a loan program. Okay, what we need to do is we need to recruit teachers to do the academics that they have to do in order for them to be approved. In my five county area, according to the 2010 census, only 2% of the people that live in that area have advanced degrees. And there you have to have the advanced degrees to where that you can go forward. A lot of what this money is going to be used is not to pay for a master's. What happens is I am aware of a person who has a degree, a master's degree in geology, and he can teach geology in the high school. But what he can't teach is physics, because what he's lacking is two classes to take to where that he can offer physics. And if this program goes through, they can come up with an agreement that says, here, you take these two classes and you can go forward with that. This program is very similar. We have a teacher's program where we've identified certain teachers that we need in the state of Wyoming in connection with the University of Wyoming. And what happens is we have a loan program very similar to that, to where that they can go, they can take the loan, they get a job in Wyoming, and if they stay long enough, then they don't have to repay the loan. This isn't a new idea. It's just something that I twisted around to help the people in the high schools. Not everybody can take advantage of this. What happens is they identify specific classes that they want to have in the high school, and that is in the agreement to where that, okay, we want you to teach English 10-10. They're not going to go out and say, okay, I'm going to become someone who's going to teach philosophy at the high school level. So I would urge your support of this bill. This will help your school districts. This will help your community colleges. And this will fulfill the legislative intent with Senate Enrolled Act 52, to where that every student in Wyoming has the opportunity to take 12 college hours before they graduate from high school. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Baker.
Just briefly on and for the bill. I think Representative Freeman's done a good job explaining this, but I just want to reiterate this. This is a response to Senate Enrollment Act 52. If we're going to put these mandates out there and we're going to want our students to be able to have this access, we've got to find some way to fund it. So to just leave them out there hanging and have these requirements there, I think is irresponsible on our part.
Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 163 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Chair is undecided. Okay. Right. Pursuant to House Regulation 6-6B, the bill has failed a voice vote. A standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Okay, great. House Bill 163 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for
Madam Chairman.
You want to just tell them. God.
Madam Chairman, please insert House Bill 147 next. Next bill after that will be House Bill 200, then 216. We'll go until 4 o'clock. We've done a wonderful job with our list, so we'll see how far we can get by 4 o'clock.
Thank you very much, sir. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 163. The reading clerk will... No, 147. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 147 is introduced by Representative Kasparek, an act relating to motor vehicle registration, providing exemption from registration fees for Purple Heart recipients as specified, limiting the exemption as specified, providing conforming amendments, providing for reimbursement of revenues to counties, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 147, Vehicle Registration Fees, Purple Heart Exemption, respectfully reports, same back to the House, with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagie, Larson, Laux, McKim, Dave Wellenser, signed by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 147 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And I am going to turn both of those explanations over to the representative from House District 32.
Representative Kasparek.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This really is a bill that's going to be hard to resist. This bill is a bill that is simple in its intent. It ensures that a veteran who qualifies as a disabled veteran and a Purple Heart recipient can make a choice of either a Purple Heart license plate or a disabled veteran license plate. The reason behind the bill is because a constituent came and said, I can't do this. I've tried to do this. Purple Heart means a great deal to me, and I qualify for both, and I am only able to get my purple or my disabled vet. I would prefer to have my Purple Heart. And I guess I would stand and say that if even one disabled veteran can't make this choice, then this is a good bill. This allows them to make that choice. This ensures that they make that choice. And Madam Chairman, I just asked for clarification if the standing House Standing Committee was moved.
How in the world do you do that?
It was.
I do believe so.
Yes. Okay. And just to clarify that put clarifying language on page 3, line 5, where is after recipient, it inserts who qualifies under paragraph 15 of this subsection and who is. So that is a clarifying language that says that the recipient is both a disabled vet and a Purple Heart recipient. Now, I will also tell you that there was some confusion as to whether this was in the statutes as written. There was confusion not only on the part of our good attorney team in LSO, on the part of legislators, but also on the part of some of our county treasurers who denied some veterans a Purple Heart plate. So with that, if there's no questions, I would call for the question on the House Standing Committee amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendments number 1 to House Bill 147 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
And I would just stand for any questions unless there are other comments.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with a recommendation that Bill number 147 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 147 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 200. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 200 is introduced by Representative Northrup, an act relating to crimes and offenses, modifying provisions relating to authority to carry a concealed weapon, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, Committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 200, Concealed Weapons-Government Meetings, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt. Excused, Representative Connolly. Signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 200 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And to explain the Standing Committee Amendment, I have to sort of back up a little bit and just give a real quick explanation of, you're going to see quite a few gun bills coming, so this is a good explanation now to get, so I don't have to keep repeating it for each one. So, in Wyoming, we have what's called open carry, and we have concealed carry. Open carry just means exactly what it sounds like. It's on the outside. If you're walking toward me, or I can see the firearm on you. Concealed means exactly that. It's underneath your clothing. We don't see it. In Wyoming, open carry is pretty much allowed everywhere, with a few small exceptions. Jails, prisons, boys' school, girls' school, correctional facilities operated by a private facility, in the state hospital. If it's not one of those, you can open carry wherever you want. And you're going to go, well, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. It's because there's two different things that you have. You have your regulatory hat, and you have your proprietary hat. So under your regulatory hat, whether you're a city or a county or a state, open carry is prohibited only in those spots. But under the proprietary hat that some government entities have, meaning that they own the property, just like a private landowner can say, no guns on my property, a government entity can do the same thing with their proprietary right. For example, there's actually no law that says you can't bring a gun into these chambers, but there is a proprietary rule, meaning that because it's owned by the state, they do it. So keep those distinctions, your regulatory hats and your proprietary hats. But under the law, there's only a few places you cannot open carry to. Okay, so then we move to concealed carry. Concealed carry, and we have two different types of concealed carry. We have permit holder concealed carry, meaning that the person went down and obtained a permit. And then we have what's called constitutional carry, which means you can conceal carry just simply because we've allowed it. Just you can carry concealed. Now, why would somebody just carry concealed and another person go get a permit? The reason you go get a permit is because then a permit is reciprocal to another state, so you can go to other states. But if you're not planning on going to another state, you can actually conceal carry in Wyoming without a permit. Okay, so you got three different types, the open carry, and then you have within concealed carry, you have the permit holders, and you have the non-permit holders. Okay, this is where this all gets down to. So in the section that deals with concealed carry, there is a section that says no person authorized to carry a concealed weapon
shall carry a concealed firearm into. And then there is a list of 11 different places you cannot conceal carry to. Even though you could open carry to, under regulatory, you can't conceal carry. So those include, and some of those actually cross over. So you can't conceal carry to a prison or jail, but you also can't open carry there either. But they just repeat it there. You can't conceal carry, into a bar. But you could potentially open carry into a bar. Okay, so that explains what was going on here. What this bill was doing, there is one provision under the law that says you cannot conceal carry into a meeting of a governmental entity. Okay, so technically under the law, you could actually open carry into a governmental meeting. Now, some have banned that through their proprietary right, and actually you'll see another bill coming later on. Cities can do it through, there's a statute that allows them to. But all this was getting at was the concealed carry. What the sponsor of the bill brought was a bill that says, we're going to keep that in place. You can't conceal carry into a governmental meeting without the written consent of the person in charge. Okay, what the committee did, and this is what I was leading up to, here's what the standing committee amendment did. The standing committee amendment that came out of committee deleted the entire bill with the exception of page 1, line 7, where it says section 1, Wyoming Statute 6-8-104T4 is, and the committee deleted amended to read, and they inserted the word repealed. And then they deleted the rest of the bill. So the whole bill is one line. It's deleting, or it's repealing, subsection 4 of T. So it would read now that anyone can conceal carry into a governmental meeting, if they so choose. That was the standing committee amendment. I think I've explained it. Now I'll turn it actually over to the sponsor of the bill, and he can explain more. But I just wanted to make sure you understood what the committee had done.
Representative Northrup.
Thank you. Initially, I was just trying to get it to where with it, the people who are in the city council meetings and, of course, county commissioner meetings could assign people or not assign, but could give permission to a concealed carry. Is that mic on? That mic on? Is that better? So that they could get a concealed carry by written permission. And now, of course, the whole thing's repealed, and there it is. Is there any questions?
Madam Chairman.
Representative Thrum.
Just because it's late in the day and we all need to wake up, I'm going to object to the standing committee amendment as being outside the scope of the bill. It's a point of order.
Can we ask? I'm asking for a rules committee meeting. This is cool. The committee has ruled that the modification or the repeal is in order. The amendment. Thank you, ma'am. Representative Northrup.
If I get that clarified, is it repealed or is the amendment good? The amendment's good?
The amendment is good, sir. Representative Northrup, did you want to proceed? Or?
Yes, I'll proceed with House Standing Committee 1. And
thank
ask
you,
for
sir.
Favorable passage.
You asked for favorable
ask
passage?
For favorable passage. Move it and ask for favorable passage.
Okay. Representative Stepson, did you want to say anything? Or sorry?
Madam Chairman, I'm on and against the amendment. And Madam Chair, I was just wondering if there had been any discussion in the committee. The concern I've always had about these sorts of provisions is the section that appears right below this, sub Romanet 5, which precludes concealed carry at any meeting of the legislature or a committee thereof. And my concern has always been on the optics of we as a legislative body pointing to other governmental entities and saying, you must allow these. You have no discretion. This is what you're going to do. But us, we here in this body, we're going to keep the preclusion. We're not going to allow you to do it, but you guys have to. And that always has struck me as, a little bit... a little bit of a heavy hand of the legislature. So it seems to me that if we're going to treat government meetings this way, we should treat them consistently or at least have that discussion about whether they should be treated consistently.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And the committee already thought we were sort of going out on an edge here by doing that. The sponsor had brought solely for that provision dealing with governmental entities. But if the good legislator from Casper wants to bring an amendment on second reading to bring in the legislature, that probably would be in order and would make it consistent.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I understood the purpose of this bill, it was to allow the governmental entities, knowing what's in their agenda, knowing their communities better than we can pretend to know their communities, to provide for concealed carry when they thought it was appropriate. And I think it's important that we give this authority to governmental entities. They're the ones attending the meetings, and it's a little heavy-handed of us to adopt this amendment when, as the good majority whip said, we don't even provide for this ourselves. Thank you.
Representative Paxson.
On and against the amendment and for the original bill. As a former county commissioner, I can tell you that there has been a problem around the state with some intimidation tactics that have been used by certain groups. And I think we are really leaving our county commissioners in a very, very vulnerable position if we pass this amendment.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to call for the ayes and nays on the amendment vote.
Having heard the motion on the standing... Do we have a second? Thank you, sir.
No, that was Jackie. So I can stand in.
Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Madam Chairman, I just want to be sure that we're all clear on exactly what we're voting on before we vote here. Ayes and nays have been called. So let's be sure what we're doing, because that means it's going to be a recorded vote. Now, as I understand the situation, as we sit today, a person can open carry in a government meeting, but they cannot
concealed carry in a government meeting. And this vote would repeal the prohibition on a concealed carry. So that means government meetings are going to be filled with people both open carrying and concealed carrying. And if you vote aye on this bill, that's what you're voting for. If you vote no, then you're voting to continue the situation where an open carry is permitted but a concealed carry is not. And I would invite somebody to correct me if I'm wrong, but that's as I understand it. I want to make sure we're all on the same page if we're going to do ayes and nays.
Are we all clear? We're going to call for the roll call. Representative Pat.
I don't believe that calling for the ayes and nays limits debate. I believe that the debate can continue if anybody wishes to take a position or make a statement relative to what we're voting on, that this is different than calling for the previous question. Just two people cannot limit the debate.
Just one moment. It has been ruled that pursuant to House Rule 6-6, we are not allowed to call for the ayes and no votes in Committee of the Whole. So, Representative Gay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There is a U.S. Supreme Court precedent on this subject. Heller is the name of the case. Justice Scalia is the author of the majority opinion. On page 24 of Justice Scalia's opinion, he states that although Second Amendment rights are rights, even rights have their limitations. And in this federal Supreme Court ruling, Scalia announces that there are quote-unquote sensitive areas which can reserve the right to limit carrying firearms within them. And in his laundry list of areas, I'm not reading this off my computer, so look it up for yourselves if you want to see chapter and verse, which areas he does spell out. But among the ones that he says, these places reserve the rights themselves to limit firearms carry within these buildings. Among them are government buildings, schools, churches, and the laundry list goes on. So look up the Heller decision. And I believe it's either page 24 or page 54 of Judge Scalia's opinion. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Is there any more discussion on the amendment? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 200 has failed. Pursuant to House Regulation 6-6. No. Oh, excuse me. Back on the bill. We're back on the bill. Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As you can see by reading the bill, that originally it was to allow written permission. We were adding without written consent of the executive head of the entity conducting the meeting. There was some heartburn over the word executive head, and I made an amendment, which is in the somewhere in there, that says presiding officer. I move that the amendment with presiding officer, which is H4301, be approved, and ask for your or move it and approve it. Thank you.
He's just calling me.
Chairman Gingrey.
Madam Chairman, that amendment actually wasn't done. He'll need to bring that on second reading.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Question 434. We're back. You want Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Since we've got rid of the standing committee amendment, I'd urge you on the bill to vote no. What you're going to see later are some other bills. By voting for this one, it nullifies the other bills that are coming. What it really comes down to is who's going to be in charge of firearms in the state of Wyoming. Are we going to have a hodgepodge system? For example, I always forget when I drive into this city that we're in that they don't allow cell phones, and you can't use a cell phone in your car. I never can remember that. What happens is when you all these cities start creating all their own little laws, and then we get into a hodgepodge. So the understanding was that we would have preemption. The state would preempt and the state would control all firearm legislation. So we don't get into all this hodgepodge stuff. What this does is it turns over the authority not only just to a government entity, it turns it over to whoever's chairing the meeting. So suddenly the man who's chairing the meeting or the woman is suddenly in charge of deciding the firearm laws of Wyoming. That doesn't work. I'd urge you to vote no on this bill.
Thank you. Question being called. All those in favor of...
Madam Chairman.
Oh, gosh. Who's... Excuse me, Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, I have a problem with that. If I have a dinner party and I invite people over, I even ask people to check their ties at the door because I don't think that they should wear ties in my house because that's not who we are. And that's not what we represent. And I think, I think that when you are in a public meeting, when you are providing a volunteer service to run for a board or a commission or a council or the legislature, that you have a right to feel safe. And it just seems like just saying no, check your gun at the door. I don't know. Businesses do it. I just think that we should have the right to say, not here, not now. Can we do this process civilly? Does everybody have to have a gun to make their point?
Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 200 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 200, excuse me. Pursuant to House Rule 6-6, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. 25. Those opposed, please stand. Having failed the standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger. Berger. Blake. Excuse. Berger excused. Blake.
No.
Blevins.
No.
Blickery.
Aye.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart. Bird,
no.
Campbell,
no.
Kennedy,
no.
Coleman,
no.
Connolly, Davison, Davison,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Esquibel,
no.
Filer,
no.
Freeman,
no.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
no.
Green, Halverson,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic,
no.
Kirkbride,
no.
Kirkbride,
no.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
no.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
no.
Laux,
no.
Madden,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
no.
Miller,
no.
Moniz. Nicholas.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Piperinen.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Summers.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters. Teeters. Teeters excused. Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Watt. Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Hunt. Aye to no. Filer. Aye to no. Harvey. Aye to no. Freeman. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 13 aye, 45 no, 2 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill 200, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
Ooh. You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
The motion carries.
Reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole, having under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 155, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 156, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 18, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 123, recommended do pass. House Bill 201, amended, and further amended. Let's see. Yeah, and then recommended do pass. House Bill 203, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 223, recommended do pass. Representative Brown moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Motion prevailed. House Bill 199, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 130, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 164, recommended do pass. House Bill 208, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 209, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 131, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 161, amended. Representative Stubson announced a conflict of interest on House Bill number 161, recommended do pass. House Bill 179, recommended do pass. House Bill 182, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 55, recommended do pass. House Bill 163, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 147, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 200, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Signed by Representative... Representative Hutchings, Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hutchings.
Thank you for the privilege of being your chair today. I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've all heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Hutchings. We're at that order of business of messages from the governor or the Senate.
Message number 191. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 36, insurance publications requirements. Ayes 23, noes 6. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 192, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 77, Community College Construction, ayes 30. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 193, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 106, projects funded by abandoned mine land funds, ayes 27, noes 3. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business of privilege of the floor for Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the 62nd, we have a fellow representative from House District 38 that is celebrating a birthday today, Mr. Tom Walters.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to remind everybody to email me mug orders if you would like mugs, and then I'll start distributing them. Thank you.
With that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom referred House Bill 103, Regulation of Firearms, State Preemption, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt. Voting no, Representative Connolly. Signed by Representative Gingrich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 109, Interstate Shipment of State Inspected Meats, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Hunt, McKim, Semlick, and Winters. One no vote, Representative Greer, and one excuse, Representative Dan Swanitzer, signed by Representative Semlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 126, Agricultural Operations, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those voting aye, Representatives Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlick, Winters. Those who voted no, Representatives Blake, Campbell, and Dan Swanitzer. Representative Semlick, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 99, Campaign Funds, Personal Use, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff. Those who voted no, Representatives Byrd, Gay, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 46, Unfair Employment Practices, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Barlow, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparik, and Throne. Those who voted no, Representatives Coleman, Larson, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 145, Insurance Coverage of Whatever That Is.
What is that? I'm going to make it something else. No. Anyway, it's House Bill 145. Look it up in your manual. Respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass, and I hope never comes back again. No. With the following amendments. Voting aye, Representatives Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparik, Larson, and Throne. Those voting no, Representative Wilson, and is signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution number 2, Social Security Benefits, Terminal Illness Situations, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparik, Larson, Throne, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
With that order of committee announcement, order of business of committee announcements, Chairman Swanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, a meet in about 10 minutes in room 302 to consider the four following bills. House Bill 205, Motor Vehicle Registration Restrictions, Motor Vehicle Weight Restrictions, Exceptions. House Bill 232, Highway Speed Limits. House Bill 229, Regulation of Natural Gas as a Transportation Fuel. And House Bill 114, Liberty Preservation Act.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock in room H18 to consider the following four bills. One's been dropped. Senate File 3, State Oil and Gas Supervision Qualifications. Senate File 2, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission Filings. House Bill 198, Wyoming Legal Tender. And Senate File 26, Authorization for Certain Radioactive Waste Facilities.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Wednesday, January 30th, upon 10 minutes upon adjournment in room H17, where we'll hear the following bills: House Bill 102, Hospitalizations of Mentally Ill Persons, and House Bill 234, Home Energy Assistance Program.
Chairman Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your House Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock. And we'll take up House Bill 194, Hunting Licenses, Reissuance for Diseased Animals, and Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
The oral file for tomorrow. We did very well today. Let's do well tomorrow and not make me regret not going till 6 o'clock tonight. House Bill 216, 37, 212, 132, 168, 103, 166, 126, 134, 99, 109, 46, House Joint Resolution 2, House Bill 96, House Bill 145. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 o'clock tomorrow, January 30, 2013.
You have heard the motion. All in favor of adjourning until tomorrow, January 30, 2013 at 10 a.m., please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The House is adjourned.